Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today I'll be talking with Tanya Canese, director of the contemporary dance company Canese, about the world premiere of Nevertheless, a performance that explores the field of gender-based harassment, from the subtle to the violent, in a marriage of song and dance, comedy and horror. Pianist Lisa Moore stops by to share details about upcoming concerts in San Francisco by Two Cents, the cello-piano duo she forms with cellist Ashley Bathgate, who will also be in studio along with composer Martin Bresnik. Composer Jake Heggie returns to bring us up to speed about the Earth Day concert, What a Wonderful World, celebrating 25 years of Noe Valley chamber music this Sunday, Earth Day, at the Noe Valley Ministry here in San Francisco. On the program, in addition to music by Beethoven, Brahms, Mendelssohn, Rachmaninoff, and Richard Strauss, there'll be a few pieces by Jake himself, including the world premiere of Meditation for two violins and piano, composed specifically for the occasion. Luminaries for the gala include a quartet of mezzos to perform an aria from Great Scott, the great Frederica von Stade, Catherine Cook, Laura Crum, and Renee Rapier among the performers. Plus, from the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, we meet with Executive Director Renee Conlon and composer-in-residence and recent Pulitzer nominee Michael Gilbertson to talk about the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra's final series of main stage concerts for the season. Also this weekend on the program, music by Haydn Stamitz and the world premiere of Gilbertson's Concerto for Chamber Orchestra. Lots to see and hear this weekend here in the Bay Area. I hope you'll be enticed to stay in town after today's show. Two Cents, the New York-based Bang on a Can all-star-derived powerhouse duo featuring cellist Ashley Bathgate and pianist Lisa Moore, and described by New York Magazine as the new music equivalent of a special ops team, will perform two San Francisco concerts of six recently commissioned American chamber works, including five Bay Area premieres, at the Presidio's Officers Club tonight and Saturday at the Center for New Music. Two Cents will bring their tour de force laser focus to works composed especially for the ensemble, and on this occasion with a Bay Area focus, with music by Martin Bresnik, Ryan Brown, Paul Drescher, Amy Beth Kirsten, Ingram Marshall, and Jack Perla. It's a pleasure to welcome the duo as well as a composer here to studio. We have Lisa Moore on piano. At least we'll have her vocal stylings, Lisa. Ashley Bathgate, cello, and composer Martin Bresnik. Welcome all to Open Air.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, we've got to talk about why you choose the music that you choose for this ensemble, Two Cents. Who would like to tackle that first? Ashley?
Well, we both sort of had this classical upbringing, and I think the duo of cello and piano has always been very popular and big in our hearts and, you know, in the repertoire that we played, and we certainly have done a fair amount of more traditional repertoire. And when we got together, which is about 8 years ago at this point, I think, you know,
in New York, right?
In New York, we met actually recording one of Martin's works for cello and piano, and we're talking about, well, what exists, you know, in contemporary music for cello and piano, and specifically in the kind of music that we were playing and commissioning on our own. And I had just joined Bang in a Can, so this was a whole new world for me. And we started asking composers that, you know, we knew or our friends and that we liked their music, and they said yes to write for us. So I think that was kind of how it all started. And before we knew it, we wound up with about 12 or 13 new pieces within the span of about, you know, a year and a half or two. So that's where it began.
Yeah, we've been enjoying performing them and bringing them back, because the funny thing about new music is you often play a piece just once and premiere it, and then you move on to the next thing. And it's been great just the other night in New York playing the works that we had not played for several years. So Jack Perler has written us an enormous ballad for the combination. And the other thing about the cello and piano is just that it's a classic sort of sound world together. Those instruments do blend so well. So that was sort of an inspiration for us, but also for the composers to sort of meet the challenge of the Brahms sonatas, the Beethoven sonatas, and to try to come up with some of their own ideas. One of the pieces we have is Amy Beth Kirsten's piece for vocal utterances based on The Spider and the Fly, and she picked that theme because she thought of it. What other duo could she think of besides Two Cents? So that's a very interesting piece that we're only doing on Saturday night at 6 p.m. at the Center for New Music.
Amy's 2013 work called Spun.
Spun, yeah, with some text by Emily Dickinson. It's a really subtle, quiet piece when we both speak and sing as well. And we kind of started with Martin's works, and he's written us an incredible piece called Prayers Remain Forever, which is sort of our tour de force piece, and it's on the disc that I think you're going to play a little bit later. But we chose this program for this weekend because many people have lived in the Bay Area or live there now. So Ingram Marshall, we're playing a little piece of his tonight called The Balladeer, which is actually dedicated to Martin because Martin's a great storyteller, which you'll find out in a second when he gets the mic. As well as that Ryan Brown's piece called Three Ideas Sleep Furiously. And he wrote this work for us when he was still at Princeton. And that was commissioned by Glenn Cornett, and people will know him from the Bay Area. And as well as that Paul Drescher's very large piece for us called Family Matters, which is three movements long. One of the movements called Mood Swings, Close and Personal. And that's a really beautiful piece we played last year at the Presidio, actually. So we're doing that on both concerts.
Composer Martin Bresnik, welcome once again to the studio. What a fortunate duo to be acquainted with.
It's a great... one of the great things about a life in music is to meet fellow musicians who give back ever so much more than you can possibly repay them for. I tell many folks, my students in particular, that if you write music that leaves a little room for the players to exercise their emotional and musical muscles, they'll repay you far, far beyond anything you could possibly compensate them with in money, for example. And these two musicians are beautifully matched. I think that people who will hear them will hear the remarkable energy and synergy that sparks between these two great musicians.
I should mention that you've written works from opera, oratorio, chamber, and symphonic music to film scores, computer music, heard around the world right now. And you're also extremely well regarded as a teacher of composition. Ironically, two of the composers that were nominated for Pulitzers were your students.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the guests today.
And, yeah, Michael Gilbertson and Ted Hearn. It would be amusing if Kendrick Lamar was also my student.
You wouldn't be on open air.
I'd probably be in a different show. You know, I'd be on a different show. But it's, you know, when you work with people of these gifts and the level of their commitment, it's such an inspiring thing for my own work. They keep me young and fresh. And actually, if I might tell a little story out of school, that Ashley Bathgate was a cello student in the great studio of Aldo Pariso at Yale, which is a remarkable studio, produced wonderful cellists. And Aldo had assigned a piece to her. I think it was Aldo who assigned the Martino to you, right? Mm-hmm. By Donald Martino, a very thorny, difficult work that I heard in concert. I really didn't know Ashley. And when she came out of the concert, I said, you know, Ashley, you really have got something for this material. You can nail this stuff. You should do something about it. And she looked at me kind of starry-eyed and said, well, what do I do now? And I said, well, you know, there's a group called Bang on a Can. It might interest you. And I think there's a cello opening.
That's fantastic. So a great entree to that ensemble.
Yeah, it's true. That's how I joined them. And I hadn't been playing a lot of contemporary music, so this kind of got me started in that way. And, you know, like what Martin's saying, I think it goes both ways, that part of the excitement and why I chose and sort of ended up in a life of new music, you know, more than anything else, is because we are working with living composers, and they're our friends and colleagues, and they're close to us, and they're writing for us. So there's something very personal about it, and satisfying in that way that you can. It's more of a collaboration, I think, than just having a piece of music handed to you that you play and never get to speak to the person who wrote it. So. Mm-hmm.
Martin, tell us a little bit about your style of writing. I'm sure it doesn't fit into just a neat little box, but...
Well, I actually finished my graduate work here in the Bay Area, and that's one of the reasons why I always love coming back. I was a graduate student at Stanford University, and I did my doctoral work with the great John Chowning, who some people from this area will certainly know as a pioneer in computer music, and worked with him and very closely doing exploring sound and acoustics. And equally importantly, I also studied here with György Ligeti, the great composer of Hungarian descent.
I didn't realize he taught here in the Bay Area.
Yes, he was a composer in residence at Stanford. He is a signatory to my doctorate at Stanford, which is a great honor for me. And I remained close to him for the rest of his life, and was a tremendous inspiration to me. So, but, you know, Ligeti was the kind of person, and Chowning, too, for that matter, who would, obviously Ligeti, as a composer, has, had an enormous reputation, but one of his primary features was that he insisted that no student write like Ligeti. He just said, please don't give me little Ligetis. I don't want little Ligetis. if you came in with something like that, he was very dismissive. And so those of us who he worked with closely felt obliged to struggle to find our own kind of musical language and to be as unideological and thought freely about it as he was. And it's very difficult to sum up the nature of my music, but it ranges on the one hand. I wrote a piece for Paul Drescher here called, and his ensemble called Fantasia on a theme by Willie Dixon, which is based on the great blues tune of Willie Dixon. On the other hand, the Prayers Remain Forever that I hope some folks will come and hear in the next concerts tonight at the Presidio and Saturday at the new music program there. That's a piece that, is a real invention of my own and pursues my own interests that involve certain degree of attention to ethnic music as well as the great traditions of my predecessors in classical music.
Mm-hmm. And that work will be featured on both concerts by Two Cents. Once again, it's tomorrow at the Presidio's Officers Club.
Tonight.
Oh, tonight, yeah. That's 7 p.m. tonight. And then Saturday night at the Center for New Music. We're going to hear some music of Martin Resnick as we go out here. Here's an excerpt from the work, the aforementioned
Prayers
work,
Remain Forever.
Prayers Remain Forever, which will be featured on both concerts. Information about the concerts are at several places, really. We can see intermusicsf.org for tonight's 7 p.m. concert at the Presidio Officers Club.
That's a free concert, by the way. People have to reserve with Eventbrite. But
it's a great space, too, for music. It's super.
Beautiful.
And then Saturday at the Center for New Music. Among the websites, we'll post these at our open air page site for more information about what Lisa's up to, lisamoore.org, martinbresnick.com, and ashleybathgate.com. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Music of Martin Bresnick featured as part of Two Cents. What's next for Two Cents, by the way? What's after this?
We're playing in Sydney, Australia, coming up in August. So yeah, we're very excited about that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Enjoy the trip.
Thank you.
Music of Martin Bresnick featured for Two Cents this weekend. Information at our website for Open Air. Thank you. Music of Martin Breznik, Pulitzer Prize incubating composer, who fostered the careers of Ted Hearn and my second guest later in this hour, which will be featured as part of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, Michael Gilbertson. 2 Cents performing tonight at the Presidio Officers Club and Saturday at the Center for New Music. 2 Cents is Ashley Bathgate on cello and Lisa Moore piano. A very good afternoon to you once again. I'm David Latulippe. Still to come, the aforementioned Michael Gilbertson will be talking along with Renee Conlin, the executive director of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, about their next concerts. I'll also talk with composer Jake Heggie about a couple of galas that he's involved with. And next, a live music performance here in KLW Studios as part of my next set of guests. Canese Collective, a contemporary dance company under the direction of Tanya Canese, is announcing the world premiere of Nevertheless, a collaboration with the Bay Area's all-women Cat Call Choir, which we'll hear shortly. It's drawing inspiration from the feminist battle cry, Nevertheless, She Persisted. The work surveys the field of gender-based harassment, from the subtle to the violent, in a marriage of song, dance, comedy, and horror. Nevertheless runs tonight through Sunday, and tickets may be found at the website, which we'll list at our website, canese.org. I'm joined by the eponymous founder of Canese, Tanya Canese, who founded the collective in 2014. Welcome to you, Tanya.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. And I'm also joined by Heather Arnett, who founded the Cat Call Choir back in 2016. Heather, welcome to you.
Hi, David. Thank you for having us.
Welcome. I'm really looking forward to hearing the live performance in a moment. We have, with bated breath, we have a quartet of singers ready to put forth some music for us. So let's talk first of all about the inspiration behind this work. It's a very troubled time that we're living in, and this must be some way to bring a little bit of a laser focus to it.
Well, you know, this project started about a year and a half ago, so long before hashtag MeToo became a thing. And it started as a response, a therapeutic response to Donald Trump's Access Hollywood video. And we created a...
Fake news. I'm sorry, no, go ahead.
We created a trio about inappropriate groping, and we were met with a large amount of enthusiasm as well as some expected trolling. And from there, we started to make a few more sections about some microaggressions, such as being told to smile or being disregarded because of politeness, etc. And at that point, Heather Arnett of Cat Call Choir reached out to me and said, "Oh my goodness, I love what's happening. Let's make something together. Let's have a collaboration." And we've been going ever since.
Hmm. So what are we going to see on the stage?
You are going to see an hour-long show.
Of multiple vignettes.
Yeah, 16 vignettes. Some of them are just dancing, some of them are just singing, and quite a few of them are a combined effort of both companies.
So how did you get started in the arts then?
Oh, goodness. It's hard to pinpoint when you start being an artist, since all of us are artists at heart. I grew up doing a lot of dance and other forms of art, and then I went to the University of Oklahoma and got a degree in dance as well as art history before moving here to the Bay Area 7 years ago.
And how about you, Heather? As you clear your throat.
I've been dancing since I was about 3. Went to school for science, but fell in love with modern dance at Illinois State University, danced there with the company, moved on to Western Illinois University, danced with that company. But my first foray of exploring politically based ideas with dance just started in 2014 when I began collecting data on all of my experiences with street harassment. And I collected data such as what I was wearing, what was said to me, how I responded, how responding made me feel, my perception of my harasser's gender, age, and race. And after about 4 months of collecting data, I took that data and I composed the first catcall choir song, which was called Lick You Lullaby to Brahms' Lullaby. And that song is entirely composed of street harassment quotes. We jumbled things up a little bit to make rhymes happen and make the rhythms sound a little funner to the ear. But it's all derived from real-life harassment. And after that song, I proposed to a local dance artist, Christine Kelly, who was in the process of creating a all-women's art festival, visual art, music, and dance, and she accepted my proposal to have a group of singers sing these songs, and that was our first performance in 2016. And then, as Tanya mentioned, she was doing her bits about the same time, and when I saw her stuff, I emailed her right away and said, we should make this meld.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned an element of humor. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
It's a very important message to get across, but you can't just lecture to people. You're not going to sell tickets just by lecturing to people, mm-hmm. basically. So how are you incorporating humor into getting this message across?
Not just in selling tickets, but also in actually convincing passersby to stop and listen to your message. Catcall Choir started as a street performance, just a single person out there in a choir robe singing. And I wanted a way for messages to be conveyed without the passersby getting scared away by the angry feminist with her fist in the air. I love that image, and I am that woman, but I also understand that that is not the best way to help people access access a conversation. And so I needed to use humor as a way in, not only to make people feel more comfortable and to hear what I had to say, but also to help me. My default is anger and frustration and throw that right hook if I'm harassed, and that just wasn't serving me. And so I needed a new way of dealing with the frustration and anger that comes from being harassed daily. The humor aspect comes into play in the irony that is so obvious on the faces of the performers when they sing these words back to you and yet have on their faces varying degrees of emotion, from anger to ecstasy, even joy and confusion.
Well, be sure you get your face close to the microphone then for our radio audience. The Catcall Choir, we have four members of the choir. Is that the full choir or five? Oh, you were the fifth. All right. Tell us what we're going to hear, then we'll talk more about the performance.
Sure. We're going to sing three different songs, two verses each, and give you a little mix.
Great. Let's hear music from the Catcall Choir, part of Canese's performance at the, Counterpulse, which is tonight through Sunday, and then we'll talk more with Tanya Canese and director Heather Arnett.
Hi, hello, girl you fine, betcha get dat all the time. Look at that there fat butt, fine, then walk away, you slut. When you smile, you look cute. Hey, how old are you? When you smile, you look cute. Hey, how old are you? Hey, hola, oye, mami. Girl, I want to lick your... Where you gone? Can't you smile? Can I talk to you a while? Hey, come back. Check this out. Know what you're all about. Hey, come back. Check this out. Know what you're all about. That hot little thing told me thank you for saying that I'd like to see
the things that she's half showing only. What else could that possibly mean? Thank you, she said thank you, goody, ooh-wee, ooh-wee. Thank you, this totally justifies me. Lovely woman, please listen closely. Your baby belly makes you hot. I'll reach out and stroke your protrusion before you can say I cannot. Thank you, she never said thank you to me. Thank you, but her smile justified me. She was standing on the subway when he came. She was squashed between the people when he came. She was standing on the subway. She was squashed between the people. He was humping her poor behind when he came. She was out walking her doggy one bright day when a boy of just 7 years crept her way. When he smacked her ass, she whirled around, said, hey, you're just a kid, what gives? He said, you know, with me you want to play.
The Cat Call Collective, live in our KALW studios. Some very interesting messages being sent and hopefully learned from if you come see the collective's presentation of the world premiere of Nevertheless at the Counterpulse tonight through Sunday. Information at kaneisee.org. That was Heather Arnett. Heather, introduce the rest of your singers for us, if you would.
Sure. We've got Mika Banks. Ali Toya.
Hello.
Celine Parker.
Hello.
And Bhumi Patel.
Hello.
Well, welcome once again. Great stuff. I mean, it really does send a message, and it makes you think. It really does.
Thank you.
That's Heather Arnett, director of the Cat Call Choir, performing as part of this amazing performance, the Kanese Collective. Tanya Kanese, tell me a little bit about the formation of the actual collective. There's a play on words there. It has to do with your last name, but tell me why you decided on that for your name.
Yeah, it's a little weird, isn't it? It's Kanese Collective, which
I was thinking Japanese, but maybe not so much.
It's the phonetic pronunciation of my Italian last name, Kanese, but the Americanized version, as well as it sort of sounds like, if you think about it, the words can I see, which is important to us and our mission because we make a lot of work that has to do with perspectives and seeing other perspectives. So it's a combination of can I see and quién es. Yes.
Is this something that has legs? Do you want to take this elsewhere or are you already doing it on the street elsewhere?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're definitely going to go on tour and take it to Senator Elizabeth Warren's house, who did call us yesterday and wish us congratulations on the inspiring work, which was just the highlight of our rehearsal.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Nice.
Yes, we do hope to take this on the road and have it seen for as many people as possible.
Do we have another tune from the Cat Call Choir or not?
Oh, goodness. Sure.
Let's go out with one more, if we can. The Cat Call Choir being featured as part of Kanese Collective's Nevertheless through Sunday at Counterpulse. Shows are at 8 o'clock tonight through Saturday with a 5 p.m. concert on performance on Sunday. KANEISEE.org. And now a little bit more from the Cat Call Choir.
A Yukon student humped her at the pole. Homegirl beat him to the ground, but then, oh no. Three more tore her t-shirt open. She was tossed around the circle. Huskies laughing on the rape trail, don't you know?
Psst, she got away. So it's totally okay.
It's okay. She's fine.
She's fine.
She's going to be fine.
That'll make you think. The Kanese Collective is being at the at Counterpulse. More information. We'll have those links at our website. My thanks to Tanya and to our guests here, especially the Cat Call Choir, for coming in and telling us a little bit about the performances. A change of pace for the moment. We're still going to hear from Jake Heggie about some gala performances that he's involved with. Next, more music. The San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, under the direction of Ben Simon, a frequent guest of this fair program and a good friend, will continue its season tomorrow evening at the Herbst, Saturday in Palo Alto, and Sunday in Berkeley, with a program entitled The Virtuoso Orchestra, which, in addition to music by Stamitz and Haydn, will feature the world premiere of composer-in-residence Michael Gilbertson's Concerto for Chamber Orchestra. Very pleased to be joined in studio by composer Michael Gilbertson and executive director Renee Conlin of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you. Boy, Michael, you're certainly in the news lately. And what's kind of interesting is that you're destined to be in the news for a long time, given the circumstances of this recent really world-breaking event. Let's talk about that first. The Pulitzer Prize, first of all, congratulations for being nominated for a Pulitzer for your work.
Thank you so much.
And also nominated Ted Hearn for his work. Both of you, interestingly, former students of my previous guest, Martin Bresnik.
That's right.
And then the winner of the Pulitzer went to Kendrick Lamar for his music. Tell us about that whole experience. What did you feel when you were first saw the list of nominees for Pulitzers?
It has been a surreal week. On Monday, I was having lunch with Ben Simon, the music director of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, and we were looking at my piece for this weekend and doing a few edits and things like that. And I got a call from another conductor I worked with, Donald Nally from The Crossing, to congratulate me. I had no idea what he was congratulating me about, so we pulled up Google and searched and found the three finalists for the Pulitzer this year included me.
How does that work? How did you submit? Did they find what?
There's
obviously a committee.
Works are nominated by publishers and various organizations, and then I'm afraid I'm not fully informed quite yet on exactly how that works, but I believe there are three finalists that the committee comes up with, and then a final determination for the winner is made at some point.
And tell us about your work. We're going to hear your work to go out with shortly, but mm-hmm. your work, Mother Chords, was what was nominated.
Yes, my quartet. It's a piece I wrote in the fall of 2016. It was premiered in 2017 at Carnegie Hall. It was a commission for the Verona Quartet, which is a wonderfully ambitious young quartet. They just played here at San Francisco State a few weeks ago. And I wanted to write a piece that was equally ambitious as they are. And I had sketched the piece, and when the election hit, I felt so differently. I was really affected by it, and I felt the need to start over. I scrapped what I had. I felt the need to write something comforting and consoling. And so the beginning of my piece, you'll hear these very fragile sort of glassy sounds or string harmonics that just sort of hover over the piece. And that's my little musical glass ceiling.
Hmm. Well, since you mentioned it and described it now, let's hear a little bit of the work, Mother Chords, music of Michael Gilbertson, and then we'll talk more with Michael and executive director of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, Renee Conlin. Just an excerpt from the Pulitzer-nominated work by Michael Gilbertson, Mother Chords. Michael, my guest here, along with Renee Conlon of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Michael is a composer in residence at the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. You would have gotten my vote, Michael. Beautiful, really, really beautiful writing.
Thank you so much.
What's interesting about this whole phenomena is that not often someone that comes in second or third will be mentioned down the road in history books. But I think because Kendrick Lamar's music won the Pulitzer, you're always going to be mentioned as the other nominees, which I think is a great tribute. I think you're going to get some good publicity time out of this.
Well, I think what's so exciting about this for me is that Kendrick Lamar winning has brought attention from so many people who otherwise would never be aware or conscious of who is even nominated or a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in music.
True.
So many people have the potential now to discover potentially my music and the music of many of our colleagues now. So that's very exciting.
It's broken the rap ceiling, so to speak, of the style of music that's even being considered, which is fantastic. Renee Conlon, when did you first encounter the music of Michael, and how is it being incorporated into the season?
Actually, I only encountered it very recently. I started listening to his music because I knew his world premiere performance was coming up, and I went to his website, and I just fell in love with it, and I'm waiting with bated breath to hear his Graffiti Concerto for Orchestra this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I'm so glad I'll get to hear it three times, because I think it's important to hear any work of music, particularly a new one, more than once.
Mm-hmm. Michael, your work, Concerto for Chamber Orchestra, aforementioned having its world premiere with the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. Tell us, you mentioned you had lunch with Ben Simon the other day, tweaking little things. What kind of changes or suggestions did he make that weren't on your radar that helped the work along?
Well, we've really been talking about tempos a lot. That's something I'm really bad at, determining exactly what tempo is going to
be. So is Beethoven, so don't feel bad.
That's right, that's right. I'm right there with him. And Ben is a fantastic conductor. He is always so well prepared, and he is really precise about tempos. So he wants to know exactly where it's going to be. And I really often need to hear a piece played in person because you know, my top priority as a composer is to write well for the musicians, to give them music that lets them sing and lets them sound their best. So often when I actually am able to hear musicians play a piece, I will adjust tempos to let them be a little bit more expressive, or even to adjust for the acoustic of the space we're in. So particularly this week, that's been kind of the center of our conversations.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned Martin Bresnik, one of your teachers. Tell us a little bit about your other influences.
Well, I love
Prokofiev. And ignore the fact that Jake Heggie is in the room.
Right. You know, Jake was a great mentor to me, too. I did a commission for the American Opera Initiative at the Washington National Opera and wrote a one-act opera for them, and Jake was there helping me along the way. He was tremendously helpful. I'm so grateful that he was there with me. So this is such a great reunion here in the studio today. I can't tell you how happy I am.
That's great.
It's been fantastic. So I'm a huge Prokofiev fan. I wrote my doctoral thesis on a Soviet political cantata by Prokofiev. I'm a big fan of George Gershwin. I love the sort of precision of his pitch material, obviously the lyricism, the melodic integrity of his work. I've never gotten bored of his music. And I'm a big fan of Mozart as well. I love Mozart.
That's a eclectic combination of people. That's fantastic. What else do you have in store during your residency with the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra?
In October, I'm writing a new work that will open the season. It'll be paired with a performance of Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, so it'll be for that size of the orchestra. And then later next season, I'm going to be doing a work for one of the educational outreach programs that the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra does around the Bay.
Very nice. Renee Conlon, The San Francisco Chamber Orchestra prides itself on offering these concerts for free, which makes a great deal of work for you, no doubt,
yes,
to make this all possible. Tell us how that happens.
Yeah. You know, I think the idea of offering admission-free concerts started at the inception, the formation of the orchestra, and the board has remained committed to that concept. It's really unusual, I think. There are orchestras and groups that offer a free concert, but I'm not aware of any other professional ensemble that is admission-free, that their entire season is admission-free. And it is challenging because we don't have ticket income, so we do have members who join for the season, but we really have to do a lot of work to raise the money to support this wonderful orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And, which falls to me.
and the extremely charismatic Ben Simon, we should say.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Well, he's our secret weapon. You know?
Michael, in addition to your work with the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra, what else is on your plate?
My next big project, I have a performance of my trumpet concerto next weekend with the Cheyenne Symphony. And then,
are you heading out to that?
Yes, I'll be in Cheyenne, beautiful part of the country. I love going there.
Bring a heavy jacket.
Absolutely. And then in June, I run a little music festival in my hometown in Dubuque, Iowa, which is a fundraiser for music education there. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Fantastic. And we look forward to hearing more of your music. The concerts on Friday here at the Herbst Theater is at 7:30 on Friday. Saturday, it's at the First United Methodist Church in Palo Alto. Sunday, at St. John's Presbyterian Church in Berkeley. You'll hear the world premiere of Michael Gilbertson's Concerto for Orchestra, along with Stamitz's Viola Concerto in D major, Juan Miguel Hernandez on viola. Do you know much about Juan?
Yes. Well, I've heard him play, and he's wonderful, and this piece will certainly show off his wonderful virtuosic technique. And I think the title of this concert selected by Ben, the Virtuoso Orchestra, I'm not sure what inspired him, but I was thinking about Stamitz because, of course, he was in Mannheim, which was a hotbed of musical activity in the 18th.
The father of the orchestra, really.
Yes, really. And a lot of people probably aren't aware that Uniform Bowings was started by Stamitz. And for those who don't know what that is, if you look at the orchestra, that all the string instruments are bowing in the same direction, which encourages greater precision. And he was also a pioneer in dynamic gradations. Before Stamitz, a composer could mark a section louder, but he couldn't have a sudden crescendo. He invented the Mannheim bomb, I think they called it. What is it?
Steamroller. There's
yes,
a steamroller.
So a sudden crescendo, yeah. Or, you know, slow
rockets,
crescendo.
Rockets, I think they were called. Mannheim rockets and
rocket,
Mannheim steamrollers.
Mannheim rocket. And I wonder how they knew what a rocket was, where that came from.
Those have been around longer than most people think.
Anyway, so he was extremely influential.
Wow.
So he was part of a virtuosic orchestra, as ours is.
Indeed. And rounding out the concerts will be Haydn's Symphony No. 104, The London, all directed by Ben Simon, once again guest conductor, guest violist Juan Miguel Hernandez is part of this concert, along with Michael Gilbertson's Concerto for Chamber Orchestra. We're going to hear a little bit more of Michael's Pulitzer-nominated Mother Chords as we say goodbye and wish you fantastic concerts, and we'll hear you hopefully on the air next time for the next round of concerts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The concerts can information about the concerts can be found at thesfco.org. Jake Heggie, just ahead here on KLW. Here's music of Michael Gilbertson once again.
Thank you.
Michael Gilbertson's Pulitzer-nominated Mother Chords. Michael's music heard as part of the San Francisco Chamber Orchestra. He's the composer in residence this season, thesfco.org, for more information about their concerts on this very busy musical dance performance weekend ahead here in the Bay Area. Stay in town, would you? There's lots to do and hear, including on Sunday. Well, let's back up a bit. It's a pleasure to welcome back pianist Jake Heggie. He's the composer of some 300 art songs and 8 operas, including Dead Man Walking, premiered by the San Francisco Opera, Moby Dick, presented by the San Francisco Opera, and It's a Wonderful Life, which will be presented this November. His At the Statue of Venus was just presented by Opera Parallel at the San Francisco at SF Jazz on a double bill with Bernstein's Trouble in Tahiti, which is when we spoke last. Jake and his music, as well as other composers, will be involved with a couple of galas coming up, appropriately titled This Sunday, What a Wonderful World, on Earth Day. It's a concert to celebrate Noe Valley Chamber Music's 25th anniversary. Jake, thanks so much for coming back to Open Air, and I'm so glad to catch you while you're in town.
Pleasure to be here with you, David, again.
A very busy guy. Boy. And congratulations on the success already of the ticket sales for this coming Sunday's concert, which I understand that people may be on standby if they want to catch this Sunday's concert.
Yeah, it's pretty much sold out, but we have a pretty good roster and a good program, and it's a fun event, and you know, 25 years, Noe Valley Chamber Music, isn't that something? We're so lucky in the Bay Area with all these amazing arts organizations. You know better than I do. But any chance to celebrate is a welcome one.
And quite a celebration it'll be. Your and my good friend Flicka will be a part of this concert, along with a further trio, shall we say, of mezzos. Also on the program, Aloysia Friedman on violin, the Rhythm Sisters String Quartet, which includes my good friend and little known that she's also a conductor, Dawn Harms, who is one of the violinists with the Rhythm Sisters String Quartet. Dawn also plays with the Opera Orchestra and the Oakland East Bay Symphony and the New Century Chamber Orchestra. So it's quite a lineup that you've managed to pull together, which I understand you've done several times for Noe Valley Ministry.
A couple of times, yeah. I mean, I live in Noe Valley. Well, sort of on the border between Noe Valley and the Castro, whatever that area is. But I live there, and so it's just a great pleasure to participate and help them along, because it's a, you know, these grassroots organizations that, you know, struggle to get along but provide such wonderful opportunities for music and music making and community, which we need so much. And for music to be the cause for the community is amazing. But one person you didn't mention on Sunday is Anita Oren, who's a musical saw player.
I was just going to mention that, believe it or not. So tell me, she's going to actually perform a work of yours on this program.
She's performing
musical saw Earthrise, which, again, greatly themed and happened to fall into the theme for Earth Day.
She puts in her bio, she plays the complete works for saw of Jake Heggie, of which there is one.
And I saw in her bio as well, nose flute.
She plays a lot of really interesting instruments. Anita is really special. She's also the executive director of the Orcas Island Chamber Music Festival, and I've been a guest up there several times. It's a festival. Orcas Island is one of the San Juan Islands in the Pacific Northwest, off the coast of Washington State. And the Aloysia Friedman and her husband, John Kimura Parker, the wonderful concert pianist, who are both coming too, they founded and they run that organization. And they've invited me a few times. And last summer, they asked me to write a piece for musical saw and string quartet. So the musical saw player is Anita, and the string quartet's the great Miro String Quartet, who are regular guests with them. And Bill Anders, the Apollo 8 astronaut who lives in Orcas Island, had always challenged them to include a classical piece for musical saw.
Wow.
So I wrote this, and it's based on the iconic photograph of his of capturing when the Earth was rising above the moon on Christmas Eve, 1968-69.
Let's hear a little bit of that. So we'll hear a little bit of Jake Heggie's Earthrise for musical saw and string quartet, and then more with Jake about the concerts he's involved in, Noe Valley, as well as an additional gala coming up, which we'll talk about. ever so brief excerpt of a musical saw and string quartet composition by Jake Heggie. And that will be performed by Anita Orne and the Rhythm Sisters as part of What a Wonderful World, an Earth Day concert to celebrate Noe Valley Chamber Music's 25th anniversary this Sunday at Noe Valley Ministry here in San Francisco. What a beautiful sound. Are you working on other works for Saw?
I would love to at some point. Right now I'm writing a new opera for the Marilla Opera Program for the summer of 19, sort of a modern-day Faust story. So that has me quietly hysterical every day.
Well, among the wonderful works on this program will be music by Mendelssohn, Rachmaninoff, and Beethoven, as well as a good, healthy helping of music of yours to celebrate Noe Valley Chamber Music, including this wonderful quartet of mezzos, which you describe as an earthy sound, appropriately for Earth Day concert, which will be Frederica von Stade, Catherine Cook, Laura Crum, and Renee Rapier, mezzo-sopranos, performing a work from your opera. So tell us about Great Scott and why you chose an aria for four mezzos.
Well, first of all, how many are there?
That you want to hear.
Yes, and I happen to have one. Actually, it's the final quartet from the opera Great Scott, which premiered at the Dallas Opera in 2015. And it featured, when I knew that we were going to write this opera, we had these great treble voices. Terrence McNally wrote the libretto. I said, Terrence, at some point, I want to write a quartet for those four treble voices. I have to do it. And it's the opera itself deals with all these themes of relevance for classical music in a world that's obsessed with popular culture and sports. Is there room for this? And at the end, these four voices stand and sing about the sacrifices they've made and how worth it has been. And in the original, it was Joyce DiDonato, Frederica von Stade, Eileen Perez, and a countertenor, Anthony Roth Costanzo. But when I saw that we had these great four mezzos who can sing all those ranges, and I realized that Noe Valley Chamber Music, the reason these places exist is because of personal sacrifice in the face of sort of insurmountable odds sometimes, and that you do have to want it that bad and believe in it that much.
Music from Great Scott, the quartet of mezzos that'll be heard this Sunday as part of Earth Concert, music of Jake Heggie. Jake, I understand you'll also be involved with a fantastic gala for the Community Music Center in May at the Four Seasons to honor Flicka von Stade and Joyce DiDonato flying in especially for this concert.
It's amazing, yeah. The Community Music Center has been around for like 97 years, and they're honoring Flicka, and they asked me if I could help with a special guest, so I called Joyce. So she finishes Cendrillon at the Met on May 11th. The morning of May 12th, she gets on a plane, flies to San Francisco and does the gala with us, and then flies to Barcelona the next day. Now, that's a friend, right?
No, that's a true friend. And a true friend we have in Jake Heggie and his fantastic music. Thanks for coming in, Jake.
Thank you, David.
We're going out with his music now to close Open Air and his quartet from Great Scott.
Oh,
Wow, I hate to interrupt that music, but it's the conclusion of Open Air for this wonderful day in April that we have a chance to hear such amazing music here in the Bay Area. Good excuse for you to stay here in the Bay Area this weekend. Fantastic concerts and performance events. Information about the Noe Valley Chamber Music Gala is at nvcm.org. And the other websites will be posted at our webpage at kalw.org. Look for the Open Air tab. We'll send you links to everything that you've heard today on this program, which was produced by Neil Swinkles. I'm your host, David LaTulip. Our shows are all archived at kalw.org. If you've got a show segment suggestions, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org. Thanks for listening.
At the time,